Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Larry Massett. Our show today, it's called Inside Art, is from a man named Tom Skelly. For many years now, he's been working as an artist in residence in the California prison system. In other words, he teaches art to state prisoners. I know that in this age of budget retrenchment, some of you might be asking, why do they need to make art in prisons? Why can't they just make license tags? But this is a narrow view of art, which after all is not about creating masterpieces to hang in art galleries. It's a spontaneous human activity. They couldn't take art out of the prison system if they wanted to. It goes on wherever people are. It doesn't have to be an oil painting, you know. It can be a tattoo, a story, a song. It's a way of thinking outside the conventions.
Many people in prison do art through music, poetry, tattoos, storytelling, and drawing. Their work is spontaneous and raw. Teaching art in prison brings new ways of thinking to the inmates. Sometimes the classes challenge the flow of what exists on the inside, and at other times it adds to that flow. But the experience always gives them the chance to break out of accepted norms. An inmate may create a comedy routine spontaneously out in the yard, and then bring it to the art program for finishing.
Watching you.
Watching you.
You got to really concentrate on it.
Okay.
Let's try it again.
How many of you guys go to McDonald's, man? McDonald's got some crazy food, man. They got a burger down at McDonald's called McLean. And I want y'all to know, it tastes like some McDoodle.
Here.
Tell you, man, I bought one of them things one day. It was hot. I went back to McDonald's with a Mick attitude. Hey! I want to talk to the Mick manager. So what seems to be the problem, Mr. Peanut? You know what's wrong. Y'all sold me some Mick doo-doo. I want my Mick money back before I kick some Mick ass up in here. Yeah. You gotta watch it though, man. When the rides jumped off, brothers in my neighborhood went crazy. Brothers just ran straight to McDonald's, put on the apron, and started cooking. They were...
Art in prison is not the same as art in museums. It's not intellectual, archival, or even considered art. Craft and folk art may better describe prison art. Like the oral tradition of storytelling, much of it gets handed down through the generations. But just as museum art continually adds to its own history, so does prison art. We might read about Durer and O'Keefe on the outside. On the inside, we hear about snake and baby, and sometimes even fishing, too.
Biting worms. It was a beautiful summer day, a perfect day for going fishing, and the lake was crowded with hopeful anglers. Caught anything yet, George? Nope, not yet. Not a bite, and I've been here since sunup. George was an old fisherman who could climb to the lake most any day. Today he was by the pier with his tackle and bait box. They're just not biting, Tom grumbled. I've tried every bait I can think of, too. Tom was one of George's old fishing buddies. The two sat hunched over beside the pier, sour-faced and gloomy. Hey, George, Tom said. Look at that kid over there. At the end of the pier stood a boy of 9 or 10 in bib overalls and a red flannel shirt with the sleeves rolled up. He wore an old straw hat to shade his face. As we watched, he pulled in a huge northern pike and laid it atop the pile of fish on the pier beside him. We ambled over to the end of the pier. Caught another one, said George. Ain't that a big one, said Tom. Here, son, said George, let me help you. George helped pull the big fish in, for it was so big it was getting away from the lake. Tom scratched his head, puzzled. How in God's name do you catch that many fish, son? He asked. What are you using for bait? George said. That's what I'd like to know, son Tom. The boy looked up at us and shrugged his shoulders. Well, I've been using biting worms, he said. Biting worms? Yeah, that's what I call them. See here where they bit me? Sure enough, his hands, arms, and legs were covered with small red bite marks. Tom's eyes widened. Say, son, do you have any more of them biting worms? Sure do, in my tack box. Take a look. There on the pier beside him was a small metal box. It seemed to move and bounce under our astonished eyes. Old George lifted the lid, peered inside, then slammed the lid back down. Wow, he cried, his eyes wild. Those aren't worms, boy, they're baby rattlers. With shaking hands, Tom raised the lid just a crack and shut it even quicker than George had. They're little rattlers, all right, he muttered. Must be half a dozen of them left, too. I didn't look. I was willing to take their word for it and kept my hands deep in my pockets. Son, George said, we'll have to get you to the doctor, pronto. We hurried the boy to George's old Chevy pickup and all crowded into the cab. The wheels spun in the dust and George sped off down the old winding shortcut to town. Tom, George, and me waited in the room. Then, in a while, the door opened.
You brought him just in time, fellas,
said Doc Casney.
Baby rattlers are more poisonous than the big ones.
As the doc handed George a small paper. Have this prescription filled, said Doc. Tom shook his head in amazement. He caught some of the biggest fish I ever seen come out of that lake. Yeah, said George, but biting worms? Really? Baby rattlers for bait. I can't believe it. That's one for the books, I said. What's your name, son? Asked George.
Bob, the boy replied.
Well, little Bob, George said, you caught the record. Biggest fish in that lake, for sure. A 42-pound northern pike. But promise me you won't use biting worms again, okay? Okay, little Bob said. When we got back to the lake, Bob's bait box was gone. Stolen, we guess. Too bad we couldn't have seen the thief's face when he opened the box and found the marvelous bait inside. Biting worms. After that, little Bob was known as the toughest fisherman to wet a hook. Know what you're looking at before you pick it up. Cut.
That story was written by an inmate from the Midwest who's part of a writer's group called the Gentleman's Club. He's also a tremendous folk art painter. Here's how someone gets involved in the artistic culture of the incarcerated. He might be trading camels, which he doesn't even smoke, with a card maker, or he might fall asleep to the sound of his cellie's pencil scratching out a portrait in the middle of the night. Art is one of the best items to barter in the prison yard. It reaps small but important trinkets of daily life, such as food, cosmetics, and cigarettes. It feeds into the daily pulse of prison life.
I make anything out of, I save all little pieces and stuff. I always find something to do with them. Like they were digging up a tree out here. These trees are old, you know, very old. Something, I think they're 200 years old. And they dug some of them up, which is a shame, but they were dead already, right? And the root, you know, underneath the root, I was making a shield like this, but I had a warrior on it, and he had a girl in his arms. And I took a piece of that root, that 200-year root, sanded it down, and made some horns out of it. And I put it on top of my shield. So you can imagine that shield has a piece of root that's 200 years old.
Tattoos are a big part of prison art, which can result in some serious problems. They are illegal because of unsanitary methods. Guitar strings are frequently used as needles. The experienced tattoo artists avoid using ink with ammonia because it doesn't produce a tattoo with good contrast. When ammonia gets into the blood, it causes systemic reactions ranging from skin irritation to gangrene. There's no doubt that an inmate's body covered with tattoos is a scary thing to see. And even though the meaning of some tattoos convey special belonging to neighborhoods and gangs, the general effect is intimidating. Rigorous bodybuilding enhances the tattooed body. Scars seem to embellish the overall effect of demanding respect.
I've been trying to do a tattoo for a week. A whole week now. A little name. Okay? And I can't because there's no place to go and do it. I can't get in out of bounds any unit. People can't come in out of bounds of my unit. And we don't live on the same unit. So it's a pain in the ass. So that is a negative aspect of art. At least my art.
Frosty the Snowman, and I'm back again. And once I start flowing, there just ain't no end.
Yo, I like swift with the kick, the gab, and so I kick it. If I see a girl pass me by, then I get with it.
I like the rock to my cabbage.
It was a rotten decision on my part to take off, thinking I was a badass, that I could get away with it. Like we used to, see, in L.A., when I was 15 years old, 16 years old, it wasn't crowded. It wasn't like it is now. And we were also very lucky. But we knew all the police there where I grew up and everything. It was like a game. We would go out and play car wars with these police, and they would chase us, we would chase them, and, you know, it was always a joke. One time, I was with a friend of mine up in the hills, and this helicopter comes over and says, you guys got to split. We said, okay, jumped in, he had an old Dodge Challenger. This is the same guy who I built the car with. We start doing donuts, smoke goes up to the helicopter takes off, we fly through this dirt pit a few miles long, hit the streets, come down this canyon called San Ysidro in Beverly Hills. We get into Beverly Hills and the helicopter's following us. We're hiding under trees. It's circling. We take off. We go to our friend's house, pull into his driveway. Look, there's a helicopter up there. He comes out with a shotgun. Just for the hell of it, points it up at the helicopter. Helicopter takes off. We better get the hell out of here. Jump back in the car. Take off. Then a red Pantera looked like our car goes the other way. About 25 cop cars following it. We go, okay, this is wild. They're going after this guy. Then we get to the corner by the police station. We look around. There are cop cars surrounding us on every corner. So he pulls sideways into the parking lot, gets out, is there a problem? They throw us against the car, sheriffs come with his car, engine blown up, everyone's screaming and yelling. My friend who was driving was one of the cops on the force, comes over, says, oh, let him go, he's a good kid, this and that. And we left. It was a joke, it was all big joke. That all reverted into me making the wrong decision. That wrong decision cost me 2 years of my life. Classical training. I took all kinds of different training. I got a bachelor's degree at Cal Arts for it. And I never did anything with it except for my own personal enjoyment.
Respect is equated with what a person is capable of doing. small frail body types that are capable of producing lifelike ballpoint pen portraits on handkerchiefs also attract a significant amount of respect and magical power. In an almost tribe-like way, the yard artist can unlock the mysteries of reason by reproducing imagery of human faces, animals, and fantastic landscapes sprinkled with hidden surprises. Everyone knows who the yard artists are. In the arts in prison, many people are talented, but few are creative. To copy something with photographic fidelity requires talent and draws respect. A talented inmate can get over big time. An illusion has been made, and the artist is likened to a magician. On the other hand, a creative inmate artist is usually considered half weirdo and left alone. If he can't copy something or shows no interest in it, then his services are not so useful. This is true for any inmate who excels in non-mainstream art. They might even give private tips to someone who asks, but by no means flaunt their artistic direction.
Kick it. Chicken, it just be grooving. 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 So, I'm thinking it's strap styling. You're thinking it's buck wallet. Chicken, it just likes it in vogue and trade rolling. I'm not a stinking it stuck the funk like the ABBA of ABBA. Bringing it ricochet, the rabbit, yes, was faster. Stinking it just been moving, diggity, yes. You got a big old lazy. I turn on, you know they get hotter. Licking it, 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 Jiggity just be grooving. I'm jiggity just be grooving. Jiggity just be grooving. Jiggity come, jiggity come, jiggity come, come. I was a nigga that not to this, nigga that not to no other. Jiggity just a man, one they call me the brother. Pump thy womb, the tomb, as to thy mother. Jiggity was the gumball Mickey. Jiggity happy days, and my name ain't Richie. Bitch, jiggity sick oneself after tagger. Music and writing are no exception to the language of the inmate artist. Poetry is usually in the form of love letters and is tinged with an aggressiveness that makes its message unmistakably clear. The writing is direct in its sing-songy combination of humor, sexual descriptions, and intimacy. Verses such as "moan and groan is the phone," "whip and lash is a mustache," "bees and honey is money," "rattle and jar is a car," "God forbid is a kid," and of course "gag and choke is a smoke." On the flip side, yearnings of places yet to be seen and the memory of places already seen are described with ornate romantic detail.
Don't
Dust and dirt filled the old western Texas air when the stagecoach came in, pulled by a grizzly bear. Growling and snarling, the bear looked around, then grabbing a box marked "Delivered any western town," he tossed off the box, down with a thud, right side up, smack dab in the mud. Then the bear pulled out a rifle and shot off the latch. Then out stepped a man wearing a patch. He said in a voice that seemed to be roaring, "I'm looking for the lady that cried, this town is boring. Where might I find her if she's around? I've traveled long and far to this here western town. And I'm aiming to please her if that's what it takes. You see, I got myself a mind, but let's make no mistakes. It's not the kind of mine where you dig for silver or gold. And don't offer me money, cause my mind can't be sold. It's the kind of mine where dreams can come true. It's not for everyone, only the chosen few, few, few. So the curtain is still up, so I'm disc jockey here. My name is Rico Tony, and we just having fun here. So back to what I'm saying, I got something to tell you here. Here was a lady came in my studio one night, and she knocked on the door. She said, "Is Rico Tony home?" He said, "What?" I said, "Rico Tony home." She said, "No, Rico Tony ain't here. Ain't nothing but baloney in here." She said, "Oh, so my God," I said, "Rico don't eat baloney." I said, "Cause he's a straight macaroni." She said, "Well, I don't have nothing to do with the macaroni." I said, "Because I want some baloney." I said, "But since Rico ain't no effect baloney," I said, "Well, then I don't want to see Rico." "All right, lady. Thank you very much. Kindly."
Music and art are leisure time activities. A dedicated band will rock hard at 8 in the morning when it's the only time they could get together. The Play When You Can system allows for live music to be heard throughout the entire day, 7 days a week, in prisons where there are band rooms. The inmate musicians form their own bands according to racial similarities. Pop themes dominate country western, jazz, and oldies. Gospel and rancheros are accepted forms of cultural expression and are free of judgment or criticism by other inmates. Non-mainstream music and the more social protest styles of reggae and punk are very seldom heard from inmate bands. Music is the one art form where competitive and racial tensions flare up.
Different types of food you can make here. I took to cook some hot dogs. Once I took two nails and an electrical wire attached to the electrical wire to each end of the nail, to each nail, and then stuck them into the end of the hot dog and plugged it into the wall to cook my hot dog.
We have one gentleman over here that everyone's forgotten, stuck off in a corner. Another artist who was doing a portrait and in pencil right now. And his name is, what's your name?
Jesus.
Jesus. And what led you to art?
The time Now that I'm here, I got time to do it.
Would you say you escape the prison atmosphere by getting involved in your art then, huh?
Yeah, and also you express what you got inside sometimes.
Do you feel that you have patience to teach someone, or did someone help you, or did you just start on your own?
No, this one got to come with practice and a lot of ganas.
Ganas means the will.
Yeah.
You definitely have to have the will. Yeah, life's a gas. I remember, and I do remember, there were times in my life when things were smooth, and then all of a sudden, the bumps, the cracks appeared. It's only part of life.
The number of hours it takes to finish an art project will never go unnoticed. An inmate artist can always quote how long it took to make something. The observer is always interested in knowing how long it took to make. Generally speaking, the more hours logged in, the more valuable the piece. And this loosely resembles the hourly wage scale on the street. Perhaps above all is the endurance and patience it took to stick with it and hang on while the hours passed. In some form or fashion, every inmate must learn how to reconcile their time. After all, it becomes suspended by the weight of an iron pendulum. Many feel incapacitated and can only hope their time won't be eclipsed by the rapid pace of change in the free world. Even though heavily tinted, the television serves as a window in visualizing their perspective of a society of which they were once a part. When the institution tells them it's time to leave, they are issued $200 gate money and are severed with an excited sense of hope and fragility.
Inside Art was produced by Tom Skelly with support from Art Search, Arts and Corrections, and the Yellow Springs Institute. If you'd like more information about this topic, send us email, write soundprint@american.edu, and in your subject field, write the word prison for an automatic response. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU at the American University. Today's program is funded in part by the National Endowment for the Arts. Write us with your ideas and comments. Write Soundprint, 4000 Brandywine Street Northwest, Suite 620, Washington, D.C., 20016. Cassettes are $12.50. If you would like to order a cassette with a credit card, call us at 202-885-1285. That's 202-885-1285. Our email address is soundprint@american.edu. Soundprint is Technical Director Anna Maria DeFreitas, Studio Engineer Robin Wise, Senior Producer Jude Doherty, and Production Assistant Francesca Raymond. Our Executive Producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Larry Massett.